man as he is comprises two beings. One whom I call man as he could be.
And the other man?
Man as he would be. Free of all the restrictions society imposes upon us. Subject only to his own will.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Hooked on Hammer. I'm Adam, your host, and with me as always is Mike.
Hello.
How are we doing today, Mike?
The nightmares persist, but so do I. How about you?
Pretty much the same.
Living that dream.
Living the dream. So yeah, we're here to talk about the two faces of Dr. Jekyll.
If you cannot bear to see a man change before your eyes, then shut them for just a few seconds, if you can. And listen for the shuddering sounds to end. They mark the evil transformation of Henry Jekyll to his monstrous other self, the cruel, depraved Edward Hyde.
1960 film directed by Terence Fisher. Jack Asher obviously came back as DOP again, but a different writer on this one, Mike.
Wolf Mankiewicz.
So he went on to write a treatment for Dr. No, obviously very famous Bond film, the first of the first, and the original Casino Royale in 1967.
Yep.
And this is, of course, one of, well, many adaptations of the classic novella by Robert Louis Stevenson, who, he wrote the original in 1886.
Quite a while back.
Just a little bit.
Or is it? That's nearly 140 years.
Oh, is it? I was in the dunce class for maths, like, thank God I've got a calculator on my phone, put it that way. Sat next to the kiddie in glue. So Mankiewicz was paid a surprising amount of money for this film, £5,000, and obviously back then that was a hell of a lot of money. It was pretty much unheard of at the time.
Wonder how much that is in inflation terms.
I mean, can we work it out? We'll be right back, please. So then, Mike, have we got an answer?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Go on then, how much?
£148,670.43.
Whew.
Yeah.
Think of all the Freddos you could buy with that.
That's three.
That's true, actually, nowadays. So, yeah, that was obviously a very substantial amount of money back then. Even now, like, that, you know, that figure is a pretty decent figure to be paid to write a film.
Yeah, to write a film. I mean, we've had the whole writer's strikes and things like that because of, you know, paying one lump sum rather than accumulated.
That was very recent as well, wasn't it? Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, a couple of years back.
So yeah, this was a big year for horror. Obviously coming the back end of summer 1960, Psycho hit cinemas in the UK in August. This released in October.
Yeah, in Britain in October.
Yeah.
Yeah, in America it released in 61. I think it was...
What, this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In February. But it was under a different name as well, rather than being Two Faces of Dr.
Jekyll.
Yeah,
you did mention this. What were some of the other titles then?
The other titles... Jekyll's Inferno, which I don't understand why, except for one scene.
Yeah, maybe the ending, but that's about it. Spoiler, sorry, folks.
Yeah. And the other one was, I want to say House of Fright.
That makes no sense at all.
Yeah, I mean, well, it takes place in a...
house that is frightful.
Yeah. Ish.
Depending on who's in, is it going to be Jekyll or Hyde? If it's Hyde, it's going to be quite a frightful house, I'd imagine. He's not the nicest in this, let's be fair.
No.
Even if he is, like, clean-shaven and looks very nice, he's not.
Yeah, they took off the really crappy makeup.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that in a bit. Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Team America.
Yeah.
And, like, not in a good way.
We need you to act like a Middle Eastern terrorist right away.
There's just one problem. I don't look Middle Eastern.
Leave that to us.
How the hell... this is amazing. How have we gone from the Two Faces of Dr. Jekyll to Team America? Well, it's pure genius, let's be fair.
It's a hidden talent.
Oh, we're getting off topic again, Mike.
Yeah.
As I said a minute ago, this is obviously one of the first... well, third adaptation of the novel.
In general?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, how many was it then, by this point?
Loads, like over 100. Oh, not by that point.
I was going
to
say,
probably looking around about 20 to 30. Quite
bloody hell, even by
more.
1960?
There was quite a few in the silent period.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, first one, 1908. But I think that's lost. So the one that most people credit is, I think it's 1910 or 1912, as kind of like one of the first kind of like main adaptations, just purely because we still have record of it.
Yeah.
And it's not lost.
Didn't go like the same route as the original Nosferatu and doing it like without permission.
No, it was with permission.
Oh, wow, okay, yeah. I didn't know that. So this is the second adaptation that Hammer did of the novella by Robert Louis Stevenson. The first was in 1959, so we're only a year behind.
Yeah.
Really, and that was called The Ugly Duckling. More of a comedic take on the film, on the book, sorry.
Yeah.
Completely different to this film.
And the other two that followed.
I gotta admit, that's probably one of my favourite Hammer films, is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, I love that film.
Like, it's very, very well done.
Yeah.
And obviously then the 2023 one with Eddie Izzard as a doctor and Nina Jekyll with it.
Yeah. So,
fantastic in it, to be fair. Like, phenomenal performance.
Two steps ahead. That is the secret.
Nina Jekyll is excellence incarnate. She demands the same from others.
Yeah, not a bad adaptation. Like, there's been much worse ones.
Like Two-Face's adopt.
What did he say?
Yeah, I don't really think there's much more we can add. So, without further ado, cue the footsteps.
Dracula, and I welcome you to my house.
In the name of God, you damn us!
This is more than a superstition, I know. The danger is very real.
Yes, a criminal lunatic, he tried to kill you.
We've discovered the source of life itself, and we've used it to restore a creature that was dead.
It begins. Come on.
So going straight into this film then, synopsis is basically Dr. Henry Jekyll experimenting with scientific means of revealing a hidden dark side, basically releases Hyde, who's a more violent, younger and better looking version of himself, which, yeah, again, quite disturbing in its own right, because obviously hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
As Dr. Henry Jekyll, he looks quite disheveled and...
Dishevelled.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
He was deshelved.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
Oh, this is one of my main gripes for the film. As I said a minute ago, it just looks like Team America.
Yeah.
It looks like really bad theatre makeup. Yeah. Well, obviously, theatre, you can get away with it because the audience is reasonably far away.
Yeah.
Unless you're made of money, you're paying for stalls that are, like, stupidly priced, especially nowadays.
Mm.
But you can get away with it, and people, like, kind of didn't give you as much jip because it was theatre. But this was, yeah, it felt very theatrical and not in a good way.
I hated it. As soon as I saw it, I thought, Christ, that's an awful hairpiece.
Yeah.
That beard, it's strange.
It was just, like, stuck on randomly.
Yeah, and they even do his eyebrows more and just everything.
Do you reckon Dr. Henry Jekyll didn't know how to, like, properly shave or tweeze his eyebrows?
Yeah, I mean, neither do I, but... Yeah.
I know, but you're not sat there with two massive, bushy eyebrows, are you? I don't think you are, anyway. I think the two of us have got beards, though, because we're just too lazy to shave all the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
It adds to my charming older good looks, shall we say. My wife would probably disagree, but there we go.
I mean, you're not even going grey in your beards. Me, on the other hand, I got, like, white.
I don't know, like, just wait until, like, I have kids or something, and I'll show up to record another podcast, and I'll look like Thingy's father from The Mummy. Yeah, Cushing's characters. Cushing characters.
They just made it white.
Yeah, literally just show up and it's like, oh my God.
That's one thing that we have to give a compliment for this film. They didn't just go, oh, he's got to look older, so we'll just make his hair white. They actually went to the effort to kind of, like, grey it a little and, like, make his eyes look a little bit more worn.
And then just stuck a beard on.
But they didn't give him a blanket like they did Steve. So there you go, there's my compliment.
It's a bit of an odd opening as well. It didn't feel like a Hammer film.
Straight off the bat.
Mary Poppins again.
What?
It reminded me a bit of Mary Poppins.
It was Snow White, not Mary Poppins.
Oh, they're both Disney, give me a fucking break.
Yeah, that's true. But straight away, intro cut.
Yeah.
It's not text on location.
Yeah, and the music was a bit odd. It was like very...
all over the place.
Well, it was like more joyful and gleeful as well. And I was like, this is a Hammer horror film, man. Like, you know, I'm not expecting like the opening score from Insidious or anything like that, where it just terrifies you. But yeah, man, I was expecting a bit more. It just felt very odd and out of place. So obviously we said in the previous episode, the Mummy titles were a bit all over the place as well.
Yeah, they were out of character.
Yeah, but it very much feels the same. It just feels almost lazy.
Doesn't have the...
typical Hammer vibes.
Yeah, the James Bernard kind of chaotic...
yeah.
...smash together of melodies. But this time around we've got David Henniker for the music, so it is somebody completely different to what we're used to. Very similar to The Mummy, where they had different sound department, different music.
Doing a bit of reading on this beforehand, it didn't really do well upon its initial release.
I think it was 140,000, and they lost her about 30,000.
Columbia turned around, didn't they? And they weren't interested in distributing it anymore. No. They were like, we're kind of done with this. So they kind of sold it on to another distributor.
It was AIP, wasn't it?
American Something like that, I think, yeah. Like, yeah. Columbia kind of just washed their hands of it.
Pretty much. And now they're still distributing it.
It's like when you go to try and quit a gym and they're like, well, you can't, you're locked in for like a contract.
Yeah.
You're just paying for the sake of having a gym membership. You don't actually go or anything. You're like, oh, okay.
I mean, I had a gym membership for years. Brilliant place, because one of the machines on it is superb.
Yeah.
I spend the majority of my time on it. It's got Mars bars, Twix, Skittles. Brilliant. I wish I could have one of them at home.
You actually had me then. I thought you were going to go out about this machine that was like, worked really well for you, and like, how do you do your exercises? Oh, how do you mentally, not fucking physically? What did you get for the gym?
Diabetes.
Oh. Yeah, how have we gone from that
to a is it vending machine?
Strange opening titles go straight into it then. Kids running around playing in the garden.
Strange again.
So from there we get introduced to the little girl who's a mute being bullied.
Yeah, which I think they're all mute, aren't they?
Aren't they?
Yeah, and that's why Jackal has them use the garden.
Yeah, but like you get introduced to Jackal now, but he's got kind of ulterior motives because he turns around and refers to the kids as dumb human animals.
Yeah, and it's all about experiments.
Yeah, like it's nice that they got somewhere to go, but it's like they're not pets, dude. Like
no. He doesn't come across as kind of like a nice character. He comes across closer to Victor in terms of a man of science. You know, everything is an experiment. Everything is about the work.
Yeah. Good input. Basically saying he wants to watch them because they act out because they can't speak. That's where they think, you know, the ones being bullied and they're getting into fights and all that.
Yeah.
Because he just says, like, it's human nature, essentially.
Yeah, one of the girls that's being bullied also gives Dr. Jekyll a flower, which comes back again later on. It's also kind of like the innocence in there and the good in people. You know, this child sees Dr. Jekyll as a nice man.
Obviously, we'll see her again later in the film. That's quite a pivotal scene and quite a important scene for Jekyll's character.
Yeah.
So then he basically returns into his lab, doesn't he?
Yeah, which is like the garage across the courtyard.
According to his wife, that we find out later, mm. He spends quite a lot of his time performing experiments of the mind. And he kind of like resigned, didn't he? We get a bit of a backstory here.
Mm.
He resigned after a paper lecture released and he was just shunned by everyone.
Yeah.
So he kind of just keeps himself to himself now because he's disgraced in the scientific community, essentially. But this brings us into the discussion about his marriage, which appears to be quite rocky. 6 years of marriage, and she hasn't thought of my work. He's, like, making out that, you know, he's the victim a bit here.
Yeah, yeah.
When in actual fact, he's, like...
he's neglected her.
Oh, massively. Even Ernst. Ernst? Is Ernst. It? Yeah. Turns around and said, like...
forget your work for a moment. Your home is in ruins. Your life is in dust sheets.
I mean, he's going on about his current exploration into the duality of man.
Yeah.
And how, as you mentioned before, everybody has like a darker and meaner side to ourselves. And Ernst turns it around and asks whether it will also help improve people and make them the better version of themselves. But Jekyll is focused on that negative side of things. When we think about the marriage of the 6 years and neglecting human contact and becoming a recluse, he is fully adopting that negativity.
Yeah, that is true. Well, it's just like moral, you know, restrictions and that, basically. Mm. What's that line in Jurassic Park? He was like, all your scientists were so concerned about whether or not they could do it, they didn't stop to think if they should be doing it.
Yeah, whether they should.
That's a great line, to be fair.
It's the rape of the natural world.
So yeah, they're having a discussion, basically, whether or not Henry should keep doing this. And he doesn't really care.
Because
he just kind of pulls out a monkey from nowhere, like a magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat.
He was in a cage.
I know, but it was a bit like, where the hell did that monkey come from?
From the cage.
Yeah, so he just does what he wants and just injects the monkey with something immediately.
Did you notice how they slowly zoom in and tilt up so you don't actually see the needle penetrating? And they do it twice.
Oh, yeah.
Do it twice in the film. First time with the monkey, the second time when he does it to himself.
Was that due to censorship issues?
No, not so much censorship issues. It's just something that you wouldn't really see. We didn't see the needles go in Dracula when they're doing the blood transfusion.
Oh, yeah, we don't.
We saw it coming out. Well, we didn't see it coming out. We saw something.
The aftermath, basically.
Yeah. But yeah, we don't see the needle. And I thought it was quite neat when I was watching it. I was like, oh, okay. So this is them avoiding showing the needle.
Do you think if they were going to, do you think the censors would have stepped in?
Yeah, there'd probably been a problem.
Did they have any problems with this film?
Minor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This film is probably the tamest one that we've covered so far.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. It's probably definitely the weakest. And I'll be honest, it is no like offence to Hammer or anything, but it is a little bit of a forgettable film.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think it is because it's so tame.
Yeah.
In comparison to, again, the other films that we've watched.
Some of the others we're going to be discussing coming up as well. But yeah, definitely a lot tamer.
Yeah. But in regards to the actual cuts and, well, censorship, in a sense, there was a few cuts in dialogue, not much, but it was all about moments where they're calling other people offensive things. Although they do keep in quite a lot of referencing of calling people a bitch and things like that, but otherwise they cut the dialogue short. They also cut short the Dancing with the Snake, but...
That was just weird.
Yeah, but the version that we've seen... The modern release, the Columbia release, or the Mill Creek, or the Powerhouse Indicate ones, they have it in its entirety. So it was only cut for the 1960 and 61. There was also a cut of brief nudity. Maria, the prostitute, the Dancing with the Snake woman, when she sits up on the bed and you kind of like see a bit of side boob, that's in it now, but that was cut. And also they cut down... the strangulation of Murray.
Yeah. But again, it's not, like, I wouldn't say that was horrendous, even if they did cut it down a bit.
No, there was
still pretty
there's
tame.
One moment in the film I was genuinely shocked to see, but it wasn't the strangulation.
It was a bloody snake for me. We'll get into that in a bit, though. Like, just a bit of a bizarre scene. So yeah, he injects the monkey, as you said, you don't see anything, but the monkey just goes mental.
Yeah. And he says it will last about 4 hours, and then he'll be back to his normal self.
Well, he, as Ernst describes him, a miniature devil.
Yeah.
Monkey's gonna be bad, man. Mm. Like, good thing he had it in the cage. Even if I didn't see it in the cage, it was a good thing he had it in the cage. And then we kind of get introduced to Kitty.
Yeah, his wife.
Basically interrupts him.
Yeah, doesn't she go into the garage / laboratory?
Yeah, because she turns around and says... Christopher Lee's character, Paul Allen, is here again and needs to speak to Henry. And basically, Kitty kicks off at him, actually, doesn't she?
Yeah, because Henry is constantly giving Paul money.
Let me tell Allen to go.
All Paul ever wants is money, my dear. Tell him I will sign his notes as usual.
But Henry, he takes advantage of you.
You might as well mention it now, Mike. Because of our previous Chad man.
Yep.
In The Curse of Frankenstein. And what do they call Christopher Lee in this?
Paul.
And what is he?
He is the Chad of the film.
he's a bit of a mega Chad, as you said.
He's not as much of a villain as Paul from Curse of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But he is a Chad.
He's a bit of a snake in the grass.
He's a giga Chad in this one.
A giga Chad?
Yeah.
He's a waste man that's got a gambling addiction, basically.
Yeah. Why are you hating on Paul for?
Chad. do we call him Paul Christopher Lee or Chad?
I say we call him Chad. just so
it's gonna
so people hear me complain about Paul are not gonna assume that I'm talking about the Giga Chad and not the Mega Chad. He is the Giga Chad.
I need to get that printed on a t-shirt. Coming soon to Hooked on Horror.
What Paul are you?
To an interactive quiz like we do the Sex and the City ones. He's such a carry. Oh, yeah. Is Carrie even a character I've never watched?
I've never watched Sex and the City.
No, it's one series, like a Die Happy Man. Never.
I thought it was two films.
No, well, it was a series on E4 or something originally. God knows. Anyway, I'm very proud that I've never clapped eyes on.
I'm currently respecting the level of procrastination to not talk about the two faces of Dr. Jekyll. We have now gone to Sex and the City.
You're welcome, folks. So yeah, that's another thing we recommend you don't watch.
Well, this film.
I was going to say along with this film. No, to be fair, I'd probably say it's worth seeing at least once because, you know, I think every adaptation tries to bring something different to the table. Like, it's the same with, like, Dracula, Frankenstein. Yeah. They all try and, you know, put their own spin on it. Some work, some don't.
Yeah, and that's actually a very good point that we failed to even mention. He's injecting the solution. So he injects the monkey with the solution and then later on, of course, he injects it into himself. In previous iterations, it's usually drinking some, you know, cocktail of chemicals or whatever, and then turning into Mr. Hyde. I mean, even in, what was that film with the books? The animation and the wizard.
Oh, the Pagemaster.
That's the one.
With Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, he drinks the solution and then throws it into the fire. And then they're like, Dr. Jekyll, are you okay? And he's like,
my name is Mr. Hyde.
That was legit terrifying.
Yeah, it's getting me.
This is where we get introduced to the Giga Chad, as you said.
Yeah.
Paul Allen.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee coming back again, obviously a main player in Hammer Horror in general.
And he's a main player in this film.
Yeah, again, completely different to the Mummy. He's actually got everything at his disposal again. He's not buried under makeup.
Yeah.
He is one of the film's saving graces, I think.
I think any scene that he's in
is
brilliant. Well, I wouldn't go as far as say brilliant, but in comparison to everything else in this film, yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah. Kitty basically isn't a fan of Paul. Well, so it seems.
Yeah.
And she basically says to Henry, like, he's a waster. He not just bailing him out again. Ernst leaves, and Henry basically says to Kitty, just give him what he wants and just get rid of him. Just do whatever you need to do. And Kitty then leaves, goes back outside and runs into the engine again.
It's as boring as it sounds. Like, unfortunately, there's no way about it. It's a bunch of people walking in and out, establishing the dynamics of their characters, which is fine. Great. Yeah. But it's just boring.
Yeah, there's no, like, pizzazz like there was in Curse of Frankenstein and Dracula. Even the Mummy had more pizzazz than this.
I mean, even, and I'm getting ahead of myself, even moments later on where they have the can-can dances is boring.
I don't know. The can-can dances, I was like, that's impressive. Like, I would have fallen over multiple times at this point.
Oh, without doubt. But
literally, like, nosebleed, broken in two places, fractured eye socket, concussion.
I mean, when they were kicking the legs up, I was getting a nosebleed.
That's for other reasons.
Like an anime character.
Oh, God. Oh. So yeah, from there, as you said, it's kind of just introducing everything. But then we get the bit of a development in the story that kind of changes the dynamics completely.
Yeah, between Kitty and the Giga Chad. We know that the marriage is on the rocks anyway. Yeah. But we also see that Kitty's actually taking it one step further, and the frustration and anger that she points towards Paul is not real. She's actually having an affair. It was interesting to bring in.
Yeah.
And I think I probably would have watched an entire film of just them having their affair.
Well, apparently, Christopher Lee got quite irritated and pissed off that he wasn't the lead for this. You can kind of see why, but at the same time, yeah. It turns out this role, they actually wrote it specifically for him.
What, the Paul Paul Arnold? Is it Paul Arnold?
Paul Allen.
Allen, that's one.
I thought we were calling him Giga Chad.
Oh, yeah, that sounds easier. I think Paul Arnold is Samuel Jackson's character from Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
I think it might not be Paul. But I just wanted to mention a film I enjoyed.
Because this wasn't one of them.
No. I want to watch The Mummy again. He's as close to the lead as possible.
He did finally go on to play Dr. Charles Marlowe.
Oh, that was Eye Monster, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
in 1971, there was, well, funnily enough, it was Hammer's rival studio at the time, wasn't there?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, I'm wondering if he did that as like a middle finger to Hammer, to be like, well, you didn't cast me as a lead in this, so I'm going to go and do exactly the same story in a different adaptation of it for your rival. So,
jog on. There's a lot in this film that, now that I'm thinking about it more, I still didn't enjoy it, I'm not saying that.
There was a lot that could have been done to make this better, basically.
No, not even that. No, I think this film couldn't be saved. but there's a lot of evidence in future films that are influenced by certain things within this one. The substance.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect.
Definitely a Jekyll and Hyde scenario.
Oh, the newer one with Demi Moore.
Yeah. Whenever she takes the substance and the younger, prettier, more attractive version of herself is around, they have like 24 hours or something that they can be them, but then they have to...
Very much like this then.
Yeah, they have to go back and swap.
Okay.
But when the younger version of the self starts taking longer than the allocated time, Demi Moore's character starts to age and become more decrepit. So it's taking the youth from her and giving it to this character. And they make mention of it later on in the film.
Yeah.
Of how Jekyll is deteriorating. He's got an increased metabolism. And it's because he's turning into Hyde more frequently.
It appears to be an accelerating of your entire metabolism. As if your life were suddenly burning itself up at a much faster rate.
Yeah, so it's true. Like things like that, there is the influence there that you can see.
Yeah. Well, I might have to give that a go instead of watching this film again. I do feel bad for shitting on this film, but it is one of their weaker films, I gotta be fair.
Yeah, I don't feel bad. I feel nothing.
I feel sorry for any Hammer horror fans listening to this. So from there then, we go back to Henry and his lab, who's continued working on his experiments throughout the day. Kitty comes in to basically say goodbye. She's going off to this like hoity-toity dinner party.
Supposedly, yeah.
Yeah, that's what she tells him anyway. Spoiler, she's not. And you kind of feel sorry for him in this moment, because obviously we found out about the affair now. Like, the audience knows she ain't going for a hoity-toity dinner.
And that's the moment as well.
He, like, begs her for help, basically.
Yeah, like, and it's like somebody's crying out for the attention they need.
Yeah.
You know, they're craving it right now, and he says, I need you.
You should have said you wanted me to stay in this evening. I did ask you.
I need you tonight, Kitty. Stay.
Oh, really, Henry? It's too selfish of you to make such an issue. You may not need friends, but I do.
I can understand that she's not reading the signs and she doesn't care. She wants to go.
To
because
be
it's
poor.
Been 6 years.
Yeah.
6 years of the same crap. But at the same time, it's like, he's noticed that. And if she would have stayed, would he have experimented further on himself?
Yeah, that's a good point. She could have actually, like, prevented it.
Yeah.
But he's been so engrossed and entailed with it, he's just completely neglected her. She's gone past the point of caring at this point.
Yeah.
She's enjoying her affair with Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a bastard in this, isn't he, Paul?
I don't know why you have such a chip for him. It's not like he's Paul.
I'm Paul Kremper.
Oh, Paul Kremper.
She even has a go at him for not being sociable.
Yeah.
She's like, well, you not might not need friends, but I do.
Yeah.
You know, you've already stuck the knife and you don't want to twist it as well. Leave the poor man alone.
Stop! He's already dead.
He just goes straight over, mixes the chemicals together, puts it straight into his orange, and bang, straight into his arm. It's almost like watching a drug addict try to get their fix.
Yeah.
Like, it's that, like, sort of feel to it.
Mm.
Yeah. God, this is actually a fucking struggle, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
But the funny thing with this is he wasn't the first choice for this role. First choice was apparently Lawrence Harvey from Espresso Bongo. I'm guessing that's a film.
I assume so. I've never heard of it.
Or like a really catchy music video or something. Yeah. Basically, Lawrence Harvey's agent just turned it down because he thought it'd be a bad career move.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say he was wrong.
I mean, if he turned on Dracula, it'd be a different story, wouldn't it? Let's be fair.
You know, a film that actually made the money rather than lost it.
The director, Terence Fisher, reportedly planned for Louis Jordan, was there, to play the lead. Paul Massey obviously played Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They only originally wanted him for the younger Mr. Hyde.
So we'd have somebody else's Jekyll who would look a bit older and...
Yeah, and not have, like, a beard glued onto him.
Yeah. Also, just to let the listeners know, of course we make notes and whatever else whilst watching this, but Adam, you missed out where you have to talk about how fantastic Paul Massey was.
Gotcha, bitch!
Do you want to take the time now to say how fantastic he was?
He wasn't bad. He wasn't bad. Can't really say anything more than that, to be honest. This whole section's been cut anyway. There were moments where, like, I really enjoyed him. Like, really enjoyed his performance. Mm. He was better as Mr. Hyde than he was as Jekyll.
Yeah.
Like, 1,000%.
Oh, yeah, the voice that he put on for Jekyll, where it's kind of, like, lower and stuff, and then Hyde's is, I assume it's his normal voice.
Yeah.
I liked the moments of, you know, going between the two personalities. Other than that, I struggling with this one. This is, like, I think him as the main character is the weakest main character that we've seen so far. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Peter Cushing fanboy. I'd rather watch Paul Kremper.
Back to the Giga Chad now, to be fair, because it cuts back to the Giga Chad and Kitty in this, like, really fancy-looking club.
Yeah, the Sphinx.
Kind of makes sense, I suppose. Maybe a little nod to the Mummy.
Maybe. Well, they had that belly dancing scene as well with the snake, so it's kind of like...
Yeah, we'll discuss that when we get to that. Like, that was just all kinds of weird.
But then they also had can-can dancers, so...
Do you reckon it's like Lidl? They do, like, one country one week and then do another country the next week?
Yeah, in the middle aisle.
And I mean, they kind of just sat here in this really nice club just taking the piss out of Henry.
They were dancing, first of all, and then they go and sit down.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that point where the Giga Chad is giving money to the musicians.
Oh, yeah.
And Kitty makes that comment.
You're very generous with my husband's money.
Women are perfect. You are the most perfect woman of them all. From perfect wife to perfect mistress and back again to perfect wife and all within a few hours.
Will you have the goodness to take me home?
Certainly. Your home or my home?
My home.
But yeah, they're like, they're dicks, a pair of them.
Yeah.
Kind of satisfying what happens to them later in the film, but we'll get that.
Yeah, we'll get to that, because I had the opposite reaction.
What?
I didn't feel it was justified.
Well, hers definitely wasn't.
No.
That was a bit too far, shall we say.
Yeah.
But Christopher Lee, 100%.
Oh, see, I didn't think so. But then again,
he was a Giga Chad. Like, he was a knob in this.
I didn't think he was that bad.
He wound me up. Really wound me up. But again, that's props to Christopher Lee for his performance, though.
Yeah.
And from there, we go back to Jekyll's lab, shot from behind, and you can already tell it's somebody different.
Yeah. The transition in this is appalling.
Yeah.
Because it is just cut away and then shoot from behind.
Hyde, we get the reveal, he kind of walks in, he's mingling, he gets spotted by a table of two women and a familiar face.
Yeah.
Not Laurence Olivier. I was listening back, I can't remember which episode I did, but I said the Curse of Werewolf with Laurence Olivier, and I always get him and Oliver Reed confused.
Yeah, no, same. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, they're two different actors.
Yeah, two completely different actors.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, a young Oliver Reed, a year before his leading man role within Curse of the Werewolf.
Yeah, this was his first hammer, so to speak.
Mm.
He was a bit part. He was just, I think he was like a bodyguard or a doorman or something like that.
I wouldn't call him a bodyguard. I'd call him said that he's probably paid.
Oh, bouncer.
No, he wasn't a bouncer.
No, I think he was. So I think, yeah, maybe he was a bouncer or something. I'll have a look at the credit. Nightclub bouncer.
Oh, he was a bouncer. I mean, that's not very fucking clear in this film.
Was anything clear in this film?
The end.
My lack of enjoyment is very clear.
Yeah. I love in my notes as well, but just to remind myself in case I forget, Paul Allen is pissed as a fart. It may seem like we, you know, come into this half-assed and randomly go from one part of the film to the next, but we do make some sort of notes, don't we, Mike?
Yeah.
It's not a great exchange, because you can see she's a little bit besotted with him, and she's maybe like, oh, can I work this to my advantage and make Paul jealous, basically?
Yeah, very much so.
Paul basically says, like, we need to leave, or ask her for one last dance, isn't it? But she goes off with Hyde instead, which is kind of humorous, because that's her husband. They've hated each other for the last 6 years. Bit of a warped sense of humour, should we say. Yeah. The Sangster cocktail, the part of the Sangster cocktail, as we said in our previous episode. And Paul just stays at the table. They bring out this really nice champagne. He's like, oh, bloody service, fine.
Yeah, yeah. But he's very rude. He's not used to not getting his own way.
Oh, the heck with it. It's about time, so is served.
As I said, like, Lee's probably one of the film's only redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
I don't know, it just feels like a bit of a letdown after the last three we've covered.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even The Mummy we enjoyed to a certain extent.
Yeah, exactly. I picked The Mummy over this any day.
So these two birds come over with Oliver Reed in tow, and he's not happy with Hyde. Kitty just bails.
Mm.
And Hyde kind of says the final word here, and he ends up calling her a trollop. But then he kind of just goes to town on poor Oliver Reed.
I'll teach him manners. Now he'll leave his little friend to look after. For God's sake, man, don't kill him.
He's got no limit. And of course, through the film, we
see. Well, he gets progressively worse,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Paul kind of stops him, and then he kind of has like a little bit of an internal battle between him and Mr. Hyde. Mm. And he kind of freaks out and just Gareth Bales out of the place, basically. Just leaves as soon as he can. So you can see like the real battle within him. He's kind of losing the battle at that point, and you know, his better version of himself is coming back.
Yeah. We see that internal battle put out externally. Whilst he's in the lab, because picking up the beaker and then smashing it in his hand whilst he's trying to resist Jekyll coming back. Because at the end of it, you know, they are two people sharing the same body. And it's that rift between them. You've got someone that is devoid of all emotion and care.
Yeah.
And you've got the person that's feeling the effects of what emotions will be brought forward.
I will return, Jekyll. Never.
Leaving the lab, of course, he turns up in the, you know, the master bedroom
where
Kitty is at that point.
Just reading in bed, casually.
Yeah.
After going out cheating on her husband.
Yep. And saying that she's now tired, doesn't want anything to do with him at that point.
Yeah.
She just thinks he's being, you know, he's off on one. And then she notices his hands cut from the beaker that he smashed there. But he's asking her, who are you really? Like, who are you inside? And it, of course, it's all about the duality of man and who we are on the inside, who we portray on the outside, all things like that.
Do you wonder if he was thinking, like, okay, what would happen if I gave her?
I was expecting that.
Yeah, but again, that never really developed, did it?
No.
But then again, like, he's, like, bored as well. He basically is asking her for, like, begging her for help at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a bit all over the place. Like, as we said, it's, you know, the foundations are laid very well, but it never really seems to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I think that's why we're not like overly struck on this film, and I think that's why we're finding it very difficult to record this fucking podcast right now. But yeah, it's like it is just so different to the last three films we covered.
Yeah,
and not in a good way.
No,
unfortunately,
it is still like a gothic romance.
It is in keeping to a sense what Hammer Horror is, but it's not. It's just not up to par, man. Like, I was expecting more when I rewatched it. I remember not minding it, you know, first time I saw it.
I realise why I forgot the majority of the film.
It is a very forgetful film, I'm not going to lie. It is, like, one that, you know, I'm not definitely not going to wish back.
I'll probably forget, like, how much I didn't enjoy it and watch it again at some point.
But yeah, again, massive juxtaposition to what it goes into next. He's out with Paul, having a good time again.
My dear Paul, you have no idea what a pleasure it is to be in your company again.
You should have been here last night. Wonderful fun. Still, I'm glad you liked the old place.
And this, of course, leads into one of the weirdest fucking scenes in the films.
Yeah. It's not quite Snake Babies and Monkey Brains.
Chilled and Monkey Brains.
It's just weird, man.
It goes on forever.
Yeah, it is far too long.
They keep going and going and going and going and going and going and going.
She's basically deep-throating the snake at certain points.
Well, she ends with the snake's head in the mouth.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, and you can really see why the BBFC wanted to cut. Not because, like, it was risque or anything. It was just shit.
What did he say?
They probably just saw it as risque instead of shit, to be fair.
Yeah, well, they've got to be objective.
So from there...
Fuck, we're still talking about this.
Yeah, we are, apparently. I do want to take a moment to apologise to any fans of this film that are listening.
Yeah, I'm sorry you don't have taste.
That's me losing like 20,000 followers on Facebook.
Oh, genuinely, when I was looking up like quotes and things like that for this film, almost every single review of it from even back in 1961.
Yeah, they weren't favourable.
They essentially said it was boring crap.
Pretty spot on.
Yeah, that's more accurate than enjoying it.
As I said, I'm trying to not be a negative Nancy. We've got one of those on the podcast already.
I would like to be subjective with this film, but I just can't.
I can't.
I mean, I went into the Mummy episode and I was ready to shit all over that film. And I didn't. I talked about things that I really enjoyed through the film.
Yeah.
I went into this one thinking I could talk about things I enjoyed. The duality of man, the constant battle of Jekyll and Hyde, which they don't flesh out enough. But none of it, just nothing. My favourite part was the Tomb Raider nosedive through the glass into the floor, which is depressing.
That is quite depressing, to be fair.
I mean, I couldn't even enjoy, like, Christopher Lee's death.
Oh.
Let's talk about the end.
It is our podcast. We pretty much do whatever we like.
Yeah.
We get a pretty pivotal scene. I say pivotal is coming towards the end now, but
yeah.
It is quite a pinnacle scene because this is the first time you actually see the two of them interact.
Mm.
The two different personalities interact.
I suppose, yeah, you can say it's a you know, a pivotal scene.
We've not had it before. This is like the only time we've actually seen them go face to face, toe to toe with each other.
Or him talking with the two different voices on screen at the same time.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's about 10 minutes before the actual end of the film, which is like 10 years whilst watching it. So, yeah, it's a pivotal scene. I'm so bitter about this film, man. The more we talk about it, the angrier I'm getting. It's unjustified. I shouldn't be this angry.
Whenever I need to get you annoyed anymore, like, because it's not funny if you just, like, pretended to be upset. I want to see your blood pressure spike, Mike.
Yeah. Well, after two energy drinks.
Two energy drinks.
Talking about
and two faces of Dr. Jekyll. Anything's possible.
You mentioned before recording that you actually quite liked the mirror gag.
Why must you destroy?
I want to be free. Everything I do is directed toward that end.
It is true. You murdered that girl.
You murdered her.
Yeah, I kind of enjoyed it. As I said, it's the only time you really see the two of them interact, and you truly get the idea of how far Hyde is willing to go. Because he just turns around and he's like, I need to destroy your character without destroying myself.
Yeah, because if you die, then I die.
Yeah. So he basically comes up with that plan, didn't he, of he's going to burn the lab down, shoot the worker.
The random guy.
Yeah. He'll basically frame it so everyone thinks Dr. Jekyll did it when Mr. Hyde runs out. It's quite a cool scene. Major narcissistic behaviour, like sociopathic behaviour as well. So he basically just destroys Dr. Jekyll and his character.
Yeah.
So everyone thinks it's him.
So everything in Jekyll's life is gone.
Yeah.
Hyde can start anew.
Well, he has taken everything. He's taken his missus, his friend, his lab, his work, his place of living, his body, his mind, his soul. And thankfully then, folks, that leads into the last scene.
I hated the mirror gag. Just saying.
Any particular reason?
Yeah, shit. I didn't like it. I thought it was very... I don't even know anymore. I didn't like the wavy smoke on there. It was magic mirror.
That I hated.
And then him appearing.
It looked cheap and tacky.
It looked like something you would see in Star Trek: The Original Series. Like, did coming up on screen.
Did you just call Star Trek: The Original Series cheap and tacky?
Yeah.
You need a wee.
I don't know. It's like that moment in you've seen Harry Potter.
Which one?
Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Okay. The point in Order of the Phoenix when they're at the Ministry of Magic. Dumbledore and Voldemort have just had their fight. Voldemort goes into Harry's mind and memories, and he's standing there in front of like a green screen with like clouds and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that as well.
You're the weak one, and you'll never know love or friendship.
I just thought, fuck off, no. final scene.
Yeah, from there,
the police arrive.
Yeah, he's killed the cleaner. The poor cleaner is just trying to come in and do his job.
Yeah.
Pours fuel everywhere, lights it on fire, which leads into our final scene after you see Hyde fleeing, going, Dr. Jekyll's lost his mind, he killed so-and-so, and he's burnt the place down, he killed himself.
Jekyll, he set fire to the place. He shot himself. He tried.
Don't say anything more just now.
And it goes into, like, a hearing, and Hyde is just sat there so smug about the entire thing.
Yeah, he smiles.
Yeah, he's, like, really smug that he's basically destroyed Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah.
He's now the predominant person, and he's just finished things, basically. Yeah. And he's gotten away with it perfectly. Yeah. Everything's worked out absolutely perfect for him. Until
the thing happens that wasn't built up.
Yeah, it
and
wasn't.
Then it happens.
It kind of just came out of nowhere.
Yep.
The voice kind of just changed, and then it's, as you said, like, it's been present throughout the film, this, like, inner dialogue and this battle between the two of them, but it never really fleshed out properly, and never, like, properly done. And he basically just changes back to Dr. Jekyll because he manages to fight him, and that's basically the end of the film.
Yeah, he says, Hyde is dead. I was the one who had to kill him.
Yeah.
Okay. How'd you do that? You gonna explain that to us?
Yeah.
No. Oh no. Oh, credit.
I have destroyed him.
And yourself, my poor friend.
Only I could destroy him. And I have.
There's no happy ending again. You're very abrupt again. I'm pretty knocked off that we didn't get the original ending we were meant to get. Because it was really, really dark, the original ending. So the ending was originally changed. Originally, they hung Hyde for his crimes. And as he, like, turns around and, like, well, then he's hanging from the noose, turns and his face just changes back to Dr. Jekyll. That would have been so much cooler. Wouldn't have saved the film by any means, but it would have been a much better ending.
I can feel my blood pressure rising. Because that sounds like I would have thoroughly enjoyed that ending, and I would have given a free pass to the rest of the film, because that's my kind of ending.
Yeah, that's a great ending.
The ending we got is a Coen Brothers ending. It's not an ending.
Mm.
It just happens, and then we turn the film off.
Well, it basically happened because, well, didn't happen because they ran over budget and over schedule. So the end, it was changed
in the distribution afterwards.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. So yeah, that's the end of the film. Thank God. Yeah, I don't want to be too negative, but it's like in comparison to the last couple we've done and the other two we're doing, this is probably going to be the weakest film out of the six we've covered in this first series.
Yeah, definitely. I do have a thought of, you know, how I mentioned about the emotion that Hyde doesn't feel, but it's always the negative emotions that brings Hyde out from Jekyll. The human contact brings Jekyll out of Hyde. Kitty refutes his advances when he's Jekyll, but also refused it when he's Hyde as well.
Poor guy can't win either way.
He doesn't have an emotional connection with Paul whatsoever because he sees Paul as a scrounger anyway and just like keep him away.
Yeah.
Arm's length and whatnot. So that brings the anger out and then he turns into Hyde. But when he's with Ernst, he's Jekyll and he's always Jekyll with Ernst. Ernst puts his hand on Hyde's chest and he turns back to Jekyll from there. He turns back to Jekyll after having sex with Maria and the human contact from there. So he's starved for that human connection, which he doesn't have in his recluse life, but looks for as Hyde. But Hyde doesn't want that emotional connection. He wants the physical pleasure from it.
Just nothing on an emotional level, basically. No.
The film, however, does not say any of that. I've just put that together from pieces that I don't even think we were supposed to put together. There was no puzzle in this film.
It's a bit of a shame, to be honest, considering, you know, the films we have covered already and, you know, films that we'll cover in other, you know, episodes. Because Hammer had some fantastic films. This is just not one of them.
No, certainly not. And you mentioned it earlier about it had the foundations there. Like, it was all laid.
It never really, like, if it laid the brickwork and then never built the wall, basically.
Exactly.
Just, yeah, not good. There's not really anything I could personally say that I'd, you know, rush back to rewatch this for.
I think the only thing I'd rewatch this for is Christopher Lee.
Yeah, he's probably the film's only redeeming quality.
Yeah.
It looked very cheaply made in comparison to the other films we've done and some of the other Hammer horror films of that time.
I'd say yes, only because of the makeup for Jekyll.
I mean, how the fuck did you go from Philip Leakey doing all that incredible stuff on Curse of Frankenstein Dracula?
Yeah.
Even the Mummy, like Karras' makeup, and I know it wasn't Philip Leakey that did the Mummy. And again, Curse of the Werewolf, the makeup's incredible.
Yeah. It doesn't look like they've just like, stuck it on his face.
Yeah, some of the sequels we've had of the Dracula films, the Frankenstein films, and the Mummy films, again, have had great effects.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that it's Roy Ashton again from The Mummy. Doing this one. But whether the makeup is that side of it, or whether the prosthetics that were on Jekyll come from, say, the art department.
Yeah, just not one of the better ones, unfortunately.
It's
quite unfortunate because it is, you know, the original story by Robert Louis Stevenson is quite a good story. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah, when you actually delve into kind of like the themes.
So, okay then, this didn't do the novella adaptation. It didn't adapt it very well. What would you say is one that did?
Ooh. So I have three, all for different reasons.
Go on then.
1931. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, purely because it follows the novella. Like, so the fidelity of it isn't 100%.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've read it, I've got to be fair.
It follows it quite well. Second one, Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, purely because of that changing a man to a woman and woman to a man, experiencing things through the other's eyes and things like that. And the third one, the miniseries on the BBC with James Nesbitt.
I've never seen that.
I highly recommend it. It was only 6 episodes. They would give him Botox shots, and they'd also style his hair. They gave him contact lenses.
So
he looks physically different to Dr. Jackman, I think his name is. Oh, and it's James Nesbitt, who's fantastic.
He's a great actor. Yeah. I need to watch The Substance as well, with the sounds of it.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
The Substance would probably make it onto that list of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde reimagining, because it's just a modern version.
Yeah.
And it works so well.
Okay, then, my final thoughts on the film.
Yeah, it's not for me.
I think I speak for both of us, and I'm just going to let Will from the in-between us wrap up our final thoughts and feelings about this?
Well, that was fucking dreadful.
And that's both objectively and subjectively.
Yeah, true. Yeah, so I think that's it for another episode.
Well, you gotta give them credit.
Why's that?
Well, they're gonna keep on doing it till they get it right.
Mike, you look relieved, I'm not gonna lie.
This has been hard. I'm looking forward to The Curse of the Werewolf, though.
Yeah. Well, we both know that's a good film.
Yeah.
With Oliver Reed, not Laurence Olivier.
No matter how much you wanted.
So, yeah, thank you again for listening. If you managed to stick with us till the end.
Well done.
Yeah, because, yeah, this wasn't the easiest one for us to record either, I will be honest. Yeah, just there wasn't a lot of redeeming qualities. I think we said all we can really say about it. This podcast will be available on Spotify, Amazon, Apple. Full list of other streaming services we got as well is on the website, hooked-on-horror.com, and just head to our podcast page. And yeah, follow us on the socials, X, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. The next step for YouTube is obviously to turn this into audio visual. So that's the plans anyway, if, you know, we get enough people listening to this. I'm still amazed people listen to us and we're talking like absolute nonsense for like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
That's definitely going to be this episode.
So yeah, thank you folks. Tune in next week when we're actually discussing a good film. Cheers.